Last Word on Today FM.
Thank you very much, Ben. 0874 100 102 gives you the last word by text or by WhatsApp. We're continuing with our interviews with the party leaders in advance of Friday's general election. You can hear all of those broadcast to date on podcast if you want to find them that way. But today we're joined by the leader of the Green Party, Roderick O'Gorman. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good afternoon, Matt. Thanks for having me on.
We had Ivana Bacik here yesterday who was glorying in the Friends of the Earth, giving the Labour Party the top marks when it came to political manifestos on environmental issues. And not only were the Labour Party on top, the Social Democrats came second and the Green Party came third. If your friends in the environmental movement are only marking you in third position as to what you want to do, what does that say about the Green Party?
Well, we have to look at delivery. The Green Party have delivered on environmental priorities like no party has ever delivered before. We went into government saying we would achieve a 7% cut in emissions, and we did that in 2023. Our emissions are now the lowest they've been at in 30 years. At the same time, our economy is growing. So we've broken that link between economic growth and increased carbon emissions. And we want to continue to do that if we're part of the next government. And our manifesto sets out how we'll do that. The policies, but also those key spending commitments as well. We know that transport is one of the areas where emissions reductions are hardest to achieve. We also know it's one of the areas where commuters all over the country are crying out for more services. So we've committed to a 10 billion euro investment in public transport, putting in place those big projects like the DART projects that have recently been granted planning permission, like Metrolink, Cork and Galway-Lewis, Metropolitan Rail in Limerick and Waterford, but also local link services, continuing the work Eamon Ryan did in spreading out local link services all over the country, linking up towns and villages, linking up communities. That is the commitment that our manifesto shows.
And it's in third place according to Friends of the Earth.
We have shown that we can deliver on these changes. When we went into government, we had to take the Climate Act that Fine Gael and Labour had implemented in 2015, and we had to replace it because it was a toothless document. And in fairness, even Leo Varadkar recently acknowledged that we were right to say we needed a Climate Act with legally binding targets. Those targets apply now, and we're starting to meet those targets because of the work the Green Party has done.
Well, does that mean, though, that those targets would suggest that it doesn't matter whether you're in the next government or not, because the government is legally bound to the reduction of emissions, and this will be done by whoever's in power, whether the Greens are part of the government or not?
No, it doesn't, because you put in place the legally binding targets, but then you have to put in place the policy and the funding to actually get you there. And that's what we've done over these 4.5 years. That's why we are starting to meet those targets. And that's why I believe we need to be part of the next government. In our 2020 manifesto, we said this was a decade of change. So we're halfway through. We've turned the ship around. We were a climate laggard in Europe. Now we're becoming a climate leader. But we have to keep that work going. And whether it's the investment in the public transport, that 10 billion euro capital investment that we're committing to, and we've set that as a red line. We've set one red line in this general election, but that is there must be 10 billion euro investment in a capital investment in public transport as part of the next government. But it's also
about and in that time, how much investment in roads? Because there are many people who will listen to this and who will say, well, that's fine if you're going for these developments in our major urban centres, but those will not necessarily apply for people who need their cars in rural Ireland or to commute between towns. And they will ask, how much money are you going to give to roads, particularly to people who are investing heavily in things like electric vehicles and hybrids, who still want to drive a car because they have no alternative?
Look, this kind of red herring is thrown at the Green Party constantly.
So what red herring?
This government has invested significantly in new road infrastructure over the last 4.5 years. We've seen new bypasses open, the Listowel bypass. We are putting a major piece of investment into Adair at the moment, the Dunkettle interchange in Cork. Even in my own area, I was launching the Snugborough Road interchange in Dublin 15 a few weeks ago. That has already freed up traffic in Blanchardstown, but also made it easier for bus journeys and for cyclist journeys to be made in the area. So we will continue to invest in roads to make them safer, but we will never apologise for putting that focus on public transport, because public transport has been the poor relation of investment in transport in this country for the last decade. And we have prioritised it in this government, and we're setting out how, if we're part of the next government, we'll continue to do that again. Give people more options, make it safer, make it more reliable, make it cheaper.
The investment in cycle lanes, have they really been worthwhile, given that many motorists complain that they look at the cycle lanes and see they're almost empty much of the time? When you have weather conditions, such as in recent times when you have not just heavy rain, but when you have leaves all over cycle lanes, that many cyclists regard them as being too dangerous to use, that our climate is not actually there to allow for year-round cycling.
Well, you look at how cyclists, how cycling is such a big part of transport in the Netherlands, in Germany, and these are countries, certainly Germany has far worse extremes of climate than we do here. We've seen a very significant uptake in cycling, particularly people taking commuter journeys. And it's about safety and it's about giving people options. I absolutely understand. Cycling isn't an option for everybody. Public transport isn't an option for everybody. But there are lots of people who would like that option for the convenience, because it gets them in and out of the city more quickly, for the health benefits of it as well. And up to this point, like, you know, cycling down the quays, cycling in and out of the city was really, really dangerous. We're giving cyclists, whether they be commuters, whether they be kids trying to get to school, we're giving them a safer alternative where they are protected from the motorists. And by giving people the option to use the bike, we're freeing up road space for motorists who need to use their car.
If Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were to go back into government without you, how do you reckon the commitment to climate change measures would differ?
I don't think we'd see the focus on it as a political issue, and I don't think we'd see the commitment to it in budgets on an annual basis.
So is that a reason for those who are into environmental issues to try and vote Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil out on the basis that they can't be trusted to do the right thing by the environment?
I think it's a reason to vote the Green Party in and give the Green Party candidate your number one vote.
But you have to go into government with somebody else. You have to have partners. So would you be happy? Yeah, but would you be happy that the other parties who might be available, such as Sinn Féin, Labour, Social Democrats, various independents, would actually be better than Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael when it comes to implementing measures that might be unpopular with many people in the public?
Well, first of all, we've shown we're willing to go into government, unlike other parties. In 2020, we took the risk, and it is a risk for a smaller party to go into government. And, you know, we got a bit of a kicking in the local and European elections earlier on this year. So it's a risk for a party, but it's a risk worth taking if you're able to deliver your policies. And as I pointed out, we have done it, whether it's on climate, whether it's on public transport, whether it's cutting the cost of childcare in my own department. So I believe we do need to see a Green Party as part of the next government. The polls are indicating it's likely that it'll be Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, but they will need additional support. My concern is that we see a government of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael propped up by some right wing or some rural independents. I think you might have seen from the debate last night how some of these smaller right wing parties, when their policies are tested, those policies don't stand up. So we need a government that'll give stability, but also has a clear sense of direction. And I'd argue that that's what the Green Party has delivered over 4.5 years.
Sorry, are you saying that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael sort of swing with the weather so much that if they're in government with you, they will implement climate change measures, but if they go into government with a small rump of what you describe as right-wing or independent parties, that they will suddenly decide to go against man-made climate change issues?
Well, look at the previous government. Look at the 2016-2020 government. It did virtually nothing on the area of climate. They brought in a climate action plan, which we had to replace once we came into office in 2020. So I think there's not only do I think it, Matt, there's proof in terms of the last government. But not only did it not do anything on climate, Matt, it wasn't a stable government. It wasn't a government that got things done, because every second week you had independent cabinet ministers coming out and kicking the same decisions that they'd just been sitting around the cabinet table at. This government has brought us through COVID. It's brought us through a cost of living crisis. It's brought us through the response to the war in Ukraine. And we've provided stability across that period, while at the same time, the Green Party have been able to provide a sense of direction in areas like climate, in areas like investment in public transport, and in supporting families and children.
I just want to briefly stay on environmental issues before getting into other topics. But do you get a sense that the public has grown weary of been told that they have to change how they live their lives because of the climate change measures, that they regard climate change measures as contributing to their cost of living crisis, and that they think that anything that they're being asked to do is almost redundant because of what's happening in the rest of the world where much greater emissions are produced?
I think the public see the importance, know the importance of making these changes, but they also want to know how government is going to help them. They can't do it on their own, particularly in the cost of living crisis. And that's what the Green Party are ultimately focused on. How do we help people make these changes? How do we make it affordable? That's why in the lifetime of this government, we cut public transport costs for everybody. We halved it for young adults. We were making it free for children under the age of 9. And that's how it's those measures that make the change more affordable is central to what's in our manifesto. So for low-income households, we're going to place free solar panels on 200,000 low-income households over the lifetime of the next government if we're re-elected. We're going to introduce a new climate ticket to again make it more affordable for people who are commuting a couple of times a week rather than maybe every single day as people would have been pre-COVID. So these are the very concrete, very tangible steps that allow us meet our carbon emissions, but save money for the public as well.
Where are you going to get the people to install 200,000 solar panels at a time when the construction industry might be struggling to build 50 or 60,000 new homes, to do all the water infrastructure, the electricity infrastructure, build the swimming pools and sports facilities that are also been promised? Where are you going to find the people to put up the solar panels?
Well, there are skills shortages in our economy right now, in building sector, in other sectors as well. So our first proposal is this idea of an IDA for skills. So we know the IDA, as it currently stated, goes abroad looking for investment into Ireland. We believe we need a state organisation that looks abroad for talent, looks abroad for the workers, the tradespeople, the specialists who are needed in various parts of our economy. So whether it's in people for installing those solar panels, whether there's the health and social care professionals we need in our health services, our mental health services, our disability services, we need to get talent from abroad. Some of them are Irish people who've emigrated, and we want to encourage them to come back, and others would be people from other backgrounds looking to contribute to our economy here.
So how many of those immigrants would you want, and then where would they live?
Well, let's just be clear, it's both immigrants and Irish people looking to bring them home. And how we are tackling the housing issue is through increased investment in the Land Development Agency. This government has established this organisation. It's working well in terms of the delivery of social and particularly affordable rental and affordable purchase homes.
Very small numbers to
date. You're right. It needs to scale up dramatically. We're saying take 4 billion euro of the Apple money to significantly increase the capitalisation of the Land Development Agency so we can use public land and build public housing on it, affordable rental and affordable purchase, but also that it could actually start to go and purchase private sites that may have planning permission on them and build them out as cost rental homes.
Will the public lands be released? Because the LDA has found previously the semi-state companies and even the likes of the HSE, which has plenty of land which could be used, regards that as an asset that it wants to keep rather than turning over for free or for little money to the state.
And I think we have to ensure that every arm of the state recognises that the housing crisis is the central mission of the next government and has to make its contribution. And by and large, that contribution will be the provision of land, the provision of public land that affordable purchase and affordable rental, cost rental homes can be built on. The Green Party brought in cost rental. We got that written into the programme for government. There are now 2,000 families in cost rental homes right now. These are homes where the rent is significantly reduced because you're not giving profit to a landlord, but we need far more.
Okay, a couple of things to finish off. A lot of listeners to this programme give out at times about everything in Ireland being Dublin-centric. So tell us about this idea you have of a junior minister for the other cities. To do what?
To ensure that we actually have genuine regional balance. You're right, people do criticise the Dublin-centric nature of planning, of development. And people in Dublin criticise it too in terms of the pressure that they see on services, on infrastructure. So I've spoken about earlier on about the importance of the public transport investment, but that has to be across our regional cities as well. And that will be really important in terms of driving transport-led housing development in Cork, in Limerick, in Galway, in Waterford. And I believe we need a junior minister in cabinet who's making sure, whether it's the public transport investment, whether it's the water investment, to make sure those houses can be serviced, they have wastewater, that is delivered in a coordinated way across government.
One final thing, you're also the Minister for Children. And last month, I think the whole country was horrified by the Ciarán Dernan situation. The idea that a child on Tuzla's radar could have been possibly dead for 2 years and before been reported missing, and before a Garda investigation determined that he is now most likely dead and he still hasn't been found. But then it emerged that over the case of 3 years, there are 53 children who were been watched by Tuzla, who have died. What does that say about Tuzla's ability to do its job properly?
Well, Matt, the death of any child is an absolute tragedy, and Tuzla's role is to be the final safety net for some of the most vulnerable children in our society.
Children, 53 deaths suggest it's failed.
We have to recognise the context of some of these deaths, Matt. Some of these are children who passed away through natural causes, and that is to no way minimise the impact or the suffering of their families. Since I've become Children's Minister, I've brought about a 50% increase in the resources that Tuzla have. I've brought about new ways for it to hire social workers so it can recruit and retain the men and women who are so important in terms of undertaking that sort of frontline work. I've better resourced foster carers, because if a child has to be taken out of the care of their family, the next best place for them is in the care of another family, so we can maintain that high rate of foster care. But I've also recognised that these vulnerable children often come to the notice of other parts of the state as well, the HSE, An Garda Síochána, the probation service. And sometimes those different arms of the state aren't working closely enough together.
Why not?
Because the siloed nature of the system sometimes, Matt. So I brought together a new interagency group on vulnerable children, and that's to bring together the organisations of the state that have a day-to-day engagement with really vulnerable children, so we can set out where are their gaps, where are their situations when services aren't speaking to each other, and set out how we can actually solve that. So every child who comes either in the care of the state or even comes to the notice of Tuzla can be given the absolute best care possible.
We leave it there because we are out of time. Thank you very much for joining us for part of this series. Green Party leader, Minister Roderick O'Gorman, thank you very much for being with us.
The Last Word on Today FM.